quite ready to start yet, are we? Now we are. Hate to break up all your socializing, but that's okay. You ought to do some of that. Although our main purpose here is to study God's Word. I like the name tags. I've heard whose idea that was, but I won't mention his name. Back in my day, if you had someone you wanted to know who they were, you actually had to do it the hard way, either ask them directly or you had to ask somebody else. So I guess the name tags makes it easier. So I kind of wish they had them back then. I don't even know if they'd invented them back that far back. I've enjoyed them, the lessons so far. I hope you have. I have not been able to hear them all. I did hear the latter part of Tim's this morning and then all of Gary's and all of Tracy's. I'm sure the things that you're going to go back and tell everybody is that you watched a video of an insect pushing a dung ball and Michael Jackson video set to music. Never thought I'd ever see that here, but they were both excellent examples, and I hope that you... what did I say, Michael Jackson? All right. Michael Jordan. I do know the difference. Michael Jackson was actually making music when I was your age. Actually, he was making music way before your age, and I heard that whistle too. Thank you. All right, let's turn our attention to the subject at hand. Brotherly kindness. And my name is Scott Abernathy. I don't know if I mentioned that. If you can read, you can see that. But we're going to talk about brotherly kindness, and I think that the fact that Tracy has already talked about God in this, I believe, is an excellent segue into the subject of brotherly kindness, because when I see these two together, and Tracy's already mentioned the passage that I'm going to show you here in just a second, when you see these two together, I can't help but think of the discussion in Matthew, the 22nd chapter, in which one of the lawyers there asked Jesus a question. Again, Tracy's already talked about it, and asked, what's the great commandment? And what was the answer to the first? What was the greatest commandment, according to Jesus? Love the Lord with all your and mind, heart, soul, and mind. All of you. All of you. And the second is likened to it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Can you kind of see that it's, if we're going to be godly, if we're going to project godliness, and we're going to love God, isn't it natural that if that's just a segue straight to loving our neighbor and showing brotherly kindness? Let's talk about what brotherly kindness actually means. Let's define it. If you go to the Greek, and I'm no Greek expert, but I can read those of people who are, it is from the word phileo adelphos. Now let me ask you a question. Does that look like any word that you've ever seen before? Philadelphia. And Philadelphia is the what? City of brotherly love. I've had to go to Philadelphia quite a bit with my job, and I'm not sure they still maintain that reputation in Philadelphia. But it's a big city, big hustle and bustle, and there are a lot of not nice people there. But if we look at those words, the word is actually transliterated. That is, it's Greek transliterated or put together to become an English word into Philadelphia. The phileo actually means an affection or fondness towards others. Adelphos means a brother or brethren. So that makes sense. City of brotherly love would be Philadelphia. Combined, it means the love of brothers or brethren. Okay? And as fellow Christians, God expects us to love one another. Interestingly enough, as I found as I was studying for this, I found that it was also a term that was used to describe the fondness that an animal has for its young. You ever watched a mama bird take care of her babies? How she feeds them, she goes and gathers food for them, she does the things that they need, gives them the things that they need. You ever seen a mama cat take care of her kittens? She'll nurse them, she'll lick them, she gives them those basic necessities that they need. Well, that's kind of the idea that we're talking about here. And again, it is something that it's described in Scripture that it's a love held among fellow Christians. There is a special relationship that you have with one another as Christians. And that can cross all lines, or should cross all lines of differences. I had an opportunity on a business trip a few months ago to go to the nation of Singapore. Never thought I'd ever go to Singapore. I may not ever go back. There's a congregation there that I worshiped with, And with the exception of a couple of Americans, maybe three Americans that were there, I didn't have anything in common with anybody there. They were a different race. They spoke to a large degree a different language, although many of them did speak English. We had a service where they would sing one song in English, and then they would turn around and sing it in Mandarin, I believe it was. But I had a special relationship with those people. They treated me as though they knew me all my life. They saw to my needs getting out of there, helped me find my way back to my hotel. They had never seen me once in their lives. May not ever see me again. But we had a special common bond with one another. We were all Christians. Hopefully we can see one another one day in heaven. It is commanded by God. 1 Thessalonians 3. May the Lord make your love increase and overflow for each other and for everyone else, just as ours does for you. This is Paul writing to the Thessalonians, chapter 4 and verse 9. Now about brotherly love, we don't need to write to you, for you yourselves have been taught by God to love one another. We are commanded by God to love our brethren. And that love that we have for one another should be demonstrated in the acts of kindness that we show to one another. And that is how, and if you think about it a minute, when we look at those lists of characteristics that we're studying, and if you look at different types of love as presented in the Bible, the Greeks were actually smarter than us in this respect. They had different words for different types of love. Just a little bit, Brent will be talking about a different type than what I'm talking about here. But the translators chose to use brotherly kindness to describe that type of love. It is something that must be active. Turn your Bibles to 1 John 3. First one gets there, raise their hand. I'll let you read it. All right, 1 John 3. That was fast. 17 and 18. Did you get that last thing in particular? Let us not love with words or tongue, and I think what it means is merely with words or tongue, but with actions and in truth. You know, we can say, oh, I love you, brother. Call me if you need me. If you need anything, just call. We say that a lot, and I think we mean that, and I don't think we mind it if people do call. But if that's all that we do, I think we're missing the point. Let's just not merely love and show kindness in terms of what we say, but what we do. And I think that's the point of that verse. It involves the physical needs of others. Turn to James 2. Now, and the first person that gets there, except for the first person that just read, James 2, I want you to go back to verse 14. And read 14 through 16. Okay, very good. You know, it seems as a lot of times when we read this verse, it is in the context of discussing the necessity of baptism for the remission of sins. And I think that verse can be used in that context. I'm not saying it's wrong to use it. But if that's all we ever see out of this particular passage, we are missing the major point of this passage. What is it saying to do? What examples is it using to say, here's what true faith really is? What kind of things are they? They're acts of what? Kindness. A brother or sister doesn't have enough clothing or food. One of you say, be well. Be warm. Hope you get warm. Hope things go well for you. And we don't do anything for them. our faith is dead. Our faith has to be active. It has to be involved. It has to be doing. And if we don't do that, we've missed the point of being Christians. Early Christians did this. Somebody summarized for me Acts, the second chapter, the things that they did, in the verses I have there, 44 and 45. You don't have to read it, but I'd like for somebody to tell me exactly what those Christians there were doing for the benefit of those who were in need. What were they doing? All right, I heard sold all that they had and gave it to people who were in need. Now, that was a special circumstance, right? There were people who had come there and had become Christians. Many of them probably were from a long ways away. There was a large group of people there. There was a large church there. And I don't know if God tells us to not take, go out and sell everything you have and don't retain anything. I think that would probably be, not be in keeping with other examples that we see. But I'll tell you this. If we were in a situation in our country where we had fellow Christians that were in need and we had things like that and we weren't willing to give them up and give them to them and sell our lands and sell our houses and properties, and we just kept those and we knew that there were people who were in need, I think we would be held accountable. Don't you? I think we would. And Acts 4 is another example there of pretty much the same type of thing. 1 Corinthians 16. What's the context of 1 Corinthians 16? What do we usually talk about when we're talking about what's being set in place there? A collection. For whom? For needy saints. There were saints, I believe, in Jerusalem that were in need, weren't there? And there was a collection. It was a regular collection that was being taken on what day? First day of the week. So this is a work of the congregation there. This is a work of the church, and that's how we see the example of what God expects us to do as a congregation on a regular basis. And they did that there. Early Christians demonstrated their love through acts of kindness towards one another, not only as individuals, but as congregations. And we have a responsibility to do that. You have a responsibility to do that. Let's continue on the idea of physical needs. Turn over to Matthew, the 25th chapter. Who's got that? In the blue. Begin reading verses 34, read through 40. This is a reference to the judgment scene, right? Those on the left, those on the right. The very things that Jesus uses to describe those who were lost versus those who would be saved are those who did things in terms of provided physical needs, acts of kindness. You gave the hungry something to eat. You gave the thirsty something to drink. You invited the stranger in. You provided clothes for those who needed them. You visited those who were in prison. I think I left off. You attended to those who were sick. I think a lot of us, and I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way, so please hear me out before I finish. I think a lot of times we as a group of people place so much emphasis on having the correct doctrinal position on all different types of issues, and believe me, we should strive to do that. I don't want to say that. I don't want to leave that the wrong impression there. We have a responsibility to do it. But if that is all that we're about, we have missed it. We have missed it. You may have the correct doctrinal position on every issue there is. You may be able to point to authority for everything that you do. But if you are not out putting this into practice and doing things for other people, as the Bible says, the very thing Jesus uses here are examples and acts of kindness that we're supposed to be doing for other people. If we don't do those things, we can have all the correct doctrinal positions, but we've missed the point. Or we've missed the overall point, the total point. Right? You see that? See what I'm trying to say? But what does it say here in terms of when we show kindness to other people, who are we really doing it for? What does it say there? We're really doing it to Christ. And when he went and when he used the other example of those who said, well, when did we see you sick? When did we see you in prison? You know, we didn't see you there, Jesus. And Jesus said, if you didn't do it to the least of these, you hadn't done it to me. So we have a responsibility. You, as young people, have a responsibility. You're of the age of accountability. And you're responsible for carrying this out. I am responsible for carrying this out. I sometimes think I'm so busy I don't have time to do anything. That's not an excuse. And I know you're busy too, and it's not an excuse. It involves seeing to the spiritual needs of others. Ephesians 4 and verse 32. It says, be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as in Christ God forgave you. Be kind and compassionate, this particular version that I copied this out of says, in forgiving one another. I'm going to tell you, if you live long enough, you're going to have, and I know you have already, you're going to have situations in which someone does you wrong, you feel. Okay? Someone may do something to offend you. You've got to be willing to forgive. And you've got to do that in a kind way. It's not such, well, I'm going to show them they did me wrong, and I'm going to teach them a lesson that they're never going to forget. And that's the reaction, the human reaction, and I'm afraid I've been guilty of that. And I'm afraid many of us have. But when we have to show brotherly kindness when we're forgiving one another. Sometimes we have to provide a rebuke to others. Galatians 6 and verse 1. Who's got that? Go ahead. So if a person is overtaken in a fault or a trespass, and that happens, it happens. We have a responsibility to see that in that situation that that person is confronted, not for lack of a better word, but we have to deal with that sometimes. But how are we to do it? Well, I told you you were going to get in that situation if you didn't listen to me. I tried to tell you. If you listen to me. Or, boy, you're in a mess now. You get what you deserve. Is that the way to do it? No. But I'm going to tell you, we're all going to be in that situation from time to time. We're all going to have a rebuke from time to time. We need to consider one another when a person is in that situation and try to do it with gentleness and concern and compassion. That's what brotherly kindness is. We have a responsibility to protect the consciences of weaker brethren. Now, in this context, in these two passages, we are talking about things that are within the realm of things that are okay. But particularly in that period of time, but not just that period of time, but particularly then, you would have had people who had been converted out of different, either as Jews, and as Jews, they would have avoided eating certain meats, they would have avoided doing any kind of work on the Sabbath, and now all of a sudden they're Christians and we have freedom and liberty. I've always never eaten that kind of meat, or I've always kept the Sabbath. I'm not sure I feel right about that. We can't just run over their conscience. We have to be gentle with them. And in the context of 1 Corinthians, that was believed eating meat sacrificed to idols. There were some who had a conscience about that. We can't just run roughshod over them. We have to be careful. And we have to exercise kindness when we're dealing with that kind of thing. We have to bear one another's burdens. Galatians 6 and verse 2 says, bear one another's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. There are things that happen in this life to all of us, at your age, at my age, at older age, things that we encounter, things that people need help with, and we have a responsibility to help them as fellow Christians. You may be the very person that helps keep a person faithful to God. You may be that person. That person may be at a crossroads in life. And I'll tell you, at your ages of many of you, all of you really, this is really the age you're deciding. Okay, you're figuring out who you're going to be, what you're going to be in many cases. I'm not saying you won't become unfaithful if you get older. It happens. But in my experience, from what I saw, people as they entered teenage years and a little older, that was the year where they decided what kind of person they were going to be. You may be the very person that helps keep someone faithful. Okay? You may be the very person that helps them stay on the right path. We must have the proper motivation when we exercise kindness for others. Turn over to Luke, the 14th chapter. Somebody quickly look at Luke 14 and tell me the context of what's going on here. Where is Jesus? If you look at verse 1, you'll figure it out. All right, he's at the house of the leader of the Pharisees. If you look back up in verse chapter 13, I believe you can see that he's in Jerusalem. I believe that's right. So he's at the house of the Pharisees. He's been invited over to eat. And while he is there, he has healed a sick person on the Sabbath. And he's also made some observations about people coming to this dinner. And as we get to verse 12, and what he observed in those people, he kind of observed, well, people were kind of trying to work their way to the top seats. They wanted the most prominent positions. Funny, I've seen that in the business world too. I've seen people where there'd be a big table, and I knew one guy in particular. No matter what, he was going to sit on that table because he wanted to be there. And I've seen others, you practically had to drag them up there. But that's something that's being talked about in that passage there. But particularly here, Jesus said, and how about someone reading verses 12 through 14? How about it, John? You got it there? Okay. Sorry. Go ahead. So he's saying here at a social event like this, he observed, I'm assuming that he observed, that this ruler had invited those who he felt were important to him and close to him. And Jesus says, don't just invite people like that. I don't think he's saying don't ever get together with your friends or your relatives. You know, Jesus did that. It's one of those not this, but this expressions where the emphasis is placed on the latter rather than the former. And Jesus used that expression quite a bit. Okay? But what he's saying is, don't merely just do that. Invite people outside of your circle of friends. And I want us to think about this, and I think this principle is true, not just of having a dinner with someone, but in terms of our social dealings and our dealings with one another, what about people who are very poor? What about people who are very elderly, widows? I know a person right now who's 96 years old. He'll be 97, Lord willing, in December. My grandfather. And mine's still good. But I have to tell you, most of the time he just sits. Because he doesn't have anybody to talk to. He no longer has a wife. People do go and see him, and his family does go and see him, but for much of his day, you know, because most of us have responsibilities, we have to be at work, things like that. But he sits. You would be surprised at the impact you could have on people like that. You would be shocked if you could just go spend an hour with people like that. Just an hour, every so often. You would make a big impact on people like that. One thing I want you to think about too, and I know we all have our own circle of friends, and I think to a degree that's okay. But I believe we have a responsibility as Christians particularly to make sure that we don't just do things with our circle of friends. There may be people who are less popular, less attractive. They just may not be in the in group. And for whatever reason, you have a responsibility, I believe, to reach out to people like that. You may make a difference in their lives. I'm telling you, I know for a fact, and I'm not talking about anybody in my immediate family or anything like that, but I know people your ages who are actually hurting because they feel sort of downtrodden. They don't feel like they're as popular. And people have been unkind to them. I've seen it, and I know it goes on. You need to make a difference in people like that. You have a responsibility to make a difference with people like that. And I encourage you to do it. I believe God expects us to do that. About to lose my papers here. Sorry. It must be without hypocrisy. Romans 12 and verse 9. The version I have here says, love must be sincere, hate what is evil, cling to what is good. 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 6. And I'll go back a little bit. I'll just summarize this. This is Paul reciting some of the things that he has done. And he mentions that in verse 6, in purity, understanding, patience, and kindness, in the Holy Spirit, and in sincere love. I'm going to tell you, there are people who will be kind to you, not because they care about you, because they have an agenda. That happens in the business world, that happens in the world in which you live, either at school or college. I don't have it on here. Do you remember the story of Absalom? What did Absalom do in order to gain the hearts of the people of Israel? Heard something? He stood outside the gate as they were coming in, right? They would be coming in to the gate for the king's judgment. And he would get out there, and he would take them by the hand and kiss them, which was a common courtesy in that day. Probably wouldn't do you a lot of good nowadays. But back then, that was accepted. And he basically wooed those people. He didn't care anything about them. He had a plan. Oh, he was kind to them, but he had a plan. We cannot let our kindness be motivated by things like that. Because, again, that's not what God is expecting of us. 1 Peter 1 and verse 22, now that you have purified yourselves by obeying the truth so that you have sincere love for your brothers, love one another deeply from the heart. For you have been born again, not of a perishable seed, but of imperishable, through the living and enduring Word of God. It must not be done to be seen of others. Matthew 6, verses 1 through 4. Who has that? Somebody hadn't read already. Sorry, John. Go ahead. In the green. Hey, guess what I did today? Widow down there, she needed something doing, and I went down there and I did it. And boy, she was happy. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with somebody knowing what you're doing. And I don't think that's, again, I think that's the hyperbole type of expression sometimes Jesus used to place emphasis on the right attitude, right? Sometimes things that you do will be found out because you can't help that. But if your motivation is to be seen of men, you're doing it for the wrong reason. And we just can't do that. We can't do that. You'll get your reward. And I've seen people do it. Well, I helped so-and-so today. I did this for so-and-so. Well, you got your reward. You got your reward. Do it for the right reasons. What are the products of brotherly kindness? And when I did this, I almost felt like that at times the thing that I consider to be a product of brotherly kindness was actually something that precipitated brotherly kindness. So hopefully you can understand the way I'm trying to look at this. 1 John 4. Verses 7 through 8. And then 20 and 21. Who's got that? Brad, go ahead. In 20 and 21. We are commanded to love each other as brethren. If we don't, how can you love God? How can you love someone, how can you, if you can't love someone that God made in the image of God, a fellow Christian, we can't do that. Yet we say we love God. Does that make sense? I don't believe that it does. Brotherly kindness allows us to know God. By this we know that we love God. Whoever does not love God, does not love, does not know God, because God is love. So we have to possess this to know God. It allows us to know God. John 13, this is a fascinating passage. 34 and 35, who's got that? That passage has always fascinated me. The thing that will be identified by the world as allowing them to understand what Jesus' true disciples are, or who they are, is what? That you love one another. And you think, well, how is that possible? If we will demonstrate this in our lives, people will see that. They'll know they really are disciples of Christ. They are putting it into action. They're not just talking about it, they're doing it. And I believe that's the point that he's making. Products of brotherly kindness, priests in unity. Ephesians 4, 1 through 3. As a prisoner for the Lord, then, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Our love for one another will help us to be unified in one another. If we have a disagreement with one another about something, that love will help us overcome that. Okay, excellent points. And I don't know if you all heard that. I don't know if I could summarize it as well as you did. But basically, Some of you are in a position to be doing these things as far as doing being out on your own, being at college, and I believe you have a responsibility to do it. And as was pointed out, when we do these things, the world will see it. And they'll say, wow, look at that. You know, and again, not doing it for the wrong reason, as we talked about, but doing it for the right reasons, doing it because it needs to be done, because we love elderly people. Okay? Have them over. You may have to go get them and pick them up and take them back home afterwards. They'll appreciate it. They will enjoy it, and you will enjoy it. You will enjoy it. They can tell you some stories that are just just fascinating stories from years ago. So, excellent point. Thank you. We're to give preference to one another. Romans 12 and verse 10. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Honor one another among yourselves, or give preference to one another. Again, that may be hard to do sometimes. Sometimes we're looking out for us. Well, I'm going to get all of what's coming to me, and he's trying to get more than me. Well, that's not necessarily the right attitude. Not the right attitude. It will be demonstrated in our speech. James 3. What's the latter half of James 3 talking about? All of James 3, excuse me. I'm confusing James 2 with James 3. The tongue. The tongue's a very little member, but boy, can it cause a lot of stuff, right? And it uses a few examples of how a rudder on a ship, very small, but boy, it can cause a huge ship to go one way or the other. And we make attempts to control our tongues. Many times unsuccessfully. If we're presenting brotherly kindness, if we're living that, it's going to be reflected in the way that we talk to one another and the things that we say to one another. It will. Proverbs 18 and verse 21, the tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat of its fruit. What's chapter 31 of Proverbs talking about? What do we sometimes call that about? The what? The virtuous woman, or the worthy woman. And what does it say in verse 26 about her, in terms of her tongue? The law of kindness is on her tongue. The law of kindness. Again, it needs to be on ours as well. It can increase the faith of others. 2 Corinthians, this is in the context of Paul encouraging the saints there to be ready to contribute to the needy saints. And I'll just summarize here. It gets to the end and he says, not only will they receive the benefit of what you're contributing, but they're going to glorify God because of this. Their faith will be increased in essence. So I think that's a powerful point. And when we do that, you're going to encourage others. Okay? Let's talk about three examples here. Story of Ruth. Ruth was a Moabite. Okay? The story really starts with a man named Elimelech. He moves because of a famine in the land of Israel. He moves down to Moab with his wife and I believe his two sons at the time. I think they had them already. And they move down there and live. Well, the two sons meet two Moabite women, and they marry them. And eventually, the man dies, and the two sons die, leaving Naomi, the wife, and the two daughters-in-law. Orpah? I want to say Oprah, but I know it's not Oprah. Orpah, right? Maybe that's where Oprah got her name. I don't know. Anyway. And Ruth was the other one. Well, when they died, Naomi says, go back to your home and go back to where you live. You know, there's no more. I don't have any other sons for you to marry. I'm not going to have any. And you certainly don't want to wait if I did. So go back. And Orpah goes back. But Ruth stays. And what did she say to Ruth? Your God will be my God, and I've lost my train of thought. What else did she say? Where you go, I will go. Your God will be my God. You're not going to let me leave you. I'll have to die before I leave you. That's how close she was. So they did. They go back together. And as the law of God said back then, they were allowed to go into fields that had been harvested and to take some of the things that were there if he was needy, take some of the leftover crop that was there, and I think they were even instructed to leave certain parts of the fields available for those who were needy. And a man named Boaz had some men working in a field, and Ruth goes and gleans from the field, right? And Boaz learns of this, and he is very kind to Ruth. He says, basically, says, don't go anywhere else. Stay in my field. And Ruth asked the question, well, why are you being so kind to me? I'm a Moabite. He said, because I've heard how you've done your mother-in-law, how you've treated her, I didn't make that sound very good, did I? How you've done your mother-in-law. How nicely you've been to your good mother-in-law, put it in modern terms. How kind you have been. I've heard about that. And that caused him to be kind to her. What eventually happened between Ruth and Boaz? Got together, married, right? There was several events had to happen for that to come to pass, but they eventually married. A Moabite. You know anything interesting about one of Ruth's descendants? She was an ancestor of Jesus. My point in all this is that your acts of kindness may lead you to unimaginable blessings. You have no idea where that may lead you just by being kind to someone else and showing and doing that what God expects out of us. Let's look at another example. We're getting late on time, so I'm going to rush through these. I believe you know the story of David and Saul and Jonathan, and it's already been talked about David and Goliath. Saul eventually became a little jealous of David, didn't he? What did he try to do to David? Tried to kill him, pursued him. David had opportunities to kill him, but did he? No, he would not put forth his hand against the king, the God's anointed king. David's love for Saul was motivated by David's love for God, I believe. And I believe our love for one another ought to be motivated by our love for God. And even after Saul and Jonathan were dead, and David mourned over them, and of course we know the close relationship that David and Jonathan had, but even though Saul had tried to kill David, David did not reciprocate that. And even after they were dead, David sought an opportunity to be kind to the family of Saul. And I think he had promised to do that, but he sought an opportunity to do that. This is for a man who tried to kill him. He exhibited that law of kindness. He exhibited it. The last example is also another of David, Nabal and Abigail. Nabal was a very rich man. And he had a lot of sheep and a lot of goats, and there was an occasion in which he and his shearers were shearing the goats, and David and his men, I believe at that time, were on the run from Saul, and he sent word to Nabal, hey, we've been kind to your shepherds, we've protected them, I believe is the inference there, and, we haven't taken advantage of them, please show us some kindness and send what you can to us. And what was Nabal's response to that? No way. I'm not going to take the meat that I've got for my shearers and give it to David. Nabal was a very grouchy, mean guy. But he had a very beautiful wife and a very wise wife that got wind of this. And she made preparations. And she took food to David and his men. David had already determined that he was going to kill all the males of the family of Nabal. He was going to kill him. He didn't mess with David. He was a man of war. And one of the reasons that he didn't build the temple was because he had been involved in so much bloodshed. And I believe that was approved by God. But again, David was a man of war. He knew how to fight. And as we learned this morning, or you've always known, even from a child. But Abigail's actions saved the lives of the males in Nabal's family. Now, Nabal eventually died. He was struck by God. But after this happened, Abigail married David. You just don't know how things are going to lead you. Things that when you're doing things for people, again, it may lead you to unimaginable blessings. Let's conclude here now. The love and kindness that we show that we're to show to all brethren is a command of God. You don't have an option here. And I'll tell you something else. I realize that your ages, you're dealing with change. Okay, physically, emotionally, and some of you are a little further along the line along that than others. Physically, when you start to change from young people to adults, it can be a roller coaster. Okay? I remember that. Not always easy to be kind when you're feeling the way that you feel, but you still have a responsibility to do it. You know, I know, and when you get out of high school, you're presented with another challenge. You start college, many of you. And then either after that or immediately after high school, you'll start the challenge of earning a living. And that's tough. And it may take a toll on you emotionally. You have a responsibility to show kindness to one another. There's no, well, I got troubles right now. I'm being bombarded with hormones and I don't feel right and I feel weird. You don't have an exemption. You don't have an exemption. God is understanding of when we make mistakes. Okay? Brotherly kindness must be properly motivated. We talked about that. Showing brotherly kindness has many spiritual byproducts and possibly unexpected blessings. Right? Showing kindness or showing brotherly kindness or failing to do so may have a big impact on the faithfulness of others. You may have a big, big role in somebody's life. I think about people that I grew up with. Again, as we were talking about earlier, people were getting your ages and making decisions and kind of going one path versus another. And I just wonder sometimes, what if somebody had intervened and shown kindness to a particular person? Would they be faithful today? They might very well be. That finishes our discussion on brotherly kindness. And we're going to talk about love here in just a minute. It's different than what we have just studied. And Brent will lead us in that. Any questions? Any comments? Thank you for your attention. I think we'll probably have 10 minutes. And start back up. Oh, John? Good point. Excellent. And I had not thought of that particular passage, but it fits right in. That's a good point. And remember something else Jesus said there? They were very careful to make sure that they had tithed all these herbs. You know, he says, these you ought to have done and not left the other undone. Okay? So what I still want to emphasize is, what happens in the world is, they don't want to deal with the doctrinal issues a lot of times. Let's just all be about love and let's just be kind to one another, and they think that can overcome everything else. Well, no, it can't. It can't. It has to be both. It has to be a balance. That's a good point. And I'm saying sometimes I'm afraid we do kind of stray into that area. Sometimes we may make laws where God hasn't made them. And I know sometimes it's hard to know exactly. Sometimes we do things out of safety and being careful, and I think there's a place for that. Sometimes we do want to take a safe path where we're not really sure, is it okay to do this or that? Well, let's just take the safe path and be careful about it. There's nothing wrong with that. What we don't want to do is to do things like the Pharisees did and make them such that judgment issues become laws. Okay. But that's a good point, and we need to be careful about making sure we focus on the weightier matters, just like they did. Thank you. points. Anything else? I appreciate your comments. Very good. Excellent. All right, now we'll take a, how much break? About 7 minutes? Go ahead and take 10. Okay. Thank you.